Welcome to Beyond the Show, the podcast home of all things Cannabis Conference. My name is Eric Sandy, and I'm the digital editor of the Cannabis Group at GIE Media. We are in the midst of a nice little cannabis legalization wave right now. We've got the latest reporting on Kentucky, Delaware, and Minnesota up on our website right now, as well as states like Texas, Florida, and Alabama, where new licenses await formal approval. If you're curious about what's happening in those states, then visit CannabisBusinessTimes.com to learn more from Associate Editor Tony Lang, Associate Editor Andriana Ruscito, and Senior Digital Editor Melissa Schiller. Also, while we're on the subject of what's happening at Cannabis Business Times and Cannabis Conference lately, we just passed through a Cannabis Conference registration rate increase earlier this week, so that means we're getting closer and closer to the event itself. If you're planning on being there, and I know you are, get yourself set up with a pass via CannabisConference.com and get acquainted with all that we're offering this year, much more than in years past. The show is evolving, and you're going to want to be there to see it and to connect with industry leaders and cultivation from around the world. We've got a tremendous international presence at the show this year and a nice emphasis on university research. These are things you're not going to get at the other U.S. cannabis events. It's just not happening. Cannabis Conference is the one you want to attend if you're a grower or if you're working with a cultivation-focused business. Go visit the website to learn more. On the podcast this week, we're still on the ground here in Missouri, where adult-use cannabis business has been absolutely booming in the first few months of the market. We spoke with John Mueller, CEO of Missouri-based multi-state operator Greenlight. After amicably severing ties to the Nevada market through a 2019 acquisition deal, John said a new opportunity awaited in the Midwest, where Missouri voters passed a medical cannabis initiative via a 65.6 majority on Amendment 2 in the November 2018 election. And of course, since then, voters have gone on to bring an adult use market to reality in that state. And so far, John's expectations have been met and exceeded by the marketplace, and we talked about just what that means to him and Greenlight. So please enjoy my conversation with John Mueller. Hello, John, and welcome to the show this week. Very glad to get a chance to talk with you about Greenlight and the Missouri market in general. It's nice to sort of have a chance to shine a spotlight on one of the, in my opinion, most exciting markets in the U.S. right now, just based on some early sales figures on the adult use side, certainly, since those sales began recently in Missouri. Before we get going into some of those numbers and just market trends, could you tell us a bit about Greenlight and maybe in doing so, a bit about your own personal Missouri background?
Yeah, absolutely. Born and raised in St. Louis, so this is definitely home turf for my brother and I, who are the co-founders of Greenlight, and have our main operation here, but we also operate in Arkansas, Illinois, South Dakota, West Virginia, and obviously pursuing other states as we go along. Previously operated out in Nevada and California in from kind of 2016 to 2019, and sold that off to Curaleaf. So got to come back home to our home state. Born and raised here, went to University of Missouri. So this is definitely home turf for us.
Awesome. Yeah, I love those kind of narratives. You know, I'm a Midwestern guy myself here over in Ohio, just down I-80, really. So definitely like that kind of the origin story. And I think it's good context here. You know, as we get into the Missouri market trends, I did want to note, of course, we're talking here on April 21st. So maybe as a way of getting into some of the overall market dynamics, how did yesterday go for you and the team?
Yeah, it was a good day. It was kind of interesting. Some of our border stores that are better volume stores weren't like exponential numbers like you normally see on a 420. But, you know, the interior stores, you know, saw a double or triple, which was nice. But overall, I think it was a good day. We had good weather, which is always something you worry about. You always want that 420 on a Friday or Saturday, but we'll take a Thursday. I think all our crew, we were stocked up, ready to go, a whole bunch of product coming out of our big cultivation manufacturing facility. So we had a lot of stuff out there. I think as the market has tightened up and we've, you know, quickly ramped, and you've probably read about some shortages of flower and some minor tweaks there that we're all ramping up for. So there wasn't the huge blowout deals that you would normally see on a 420. It was more isolated, really, to your concentrates and your edibles and things along those lines. So I think the combination of that stuff was a great day. We had a bunch of great festivals and things going on. So definitely first world problems.
Certainly. Yeah, definitely exciting to have that sort of under the belt, so to speak, in this first year of adult use sales, which, you know, as I kind of alluded to just a moment ago, are kind of off and running. Just the numbers alone have been fantastic coming out of Missouri. I did want to point out that, maybe 6 months ago or so, you spoke with my colleague, Tony Lang, for a feature on Greenlight. And I was just reading that feature again this morning. And in that piece, you were predicting $1 billion+ market in the state. And if we just do some basic back of the envelope math, all signs point to that happening as we get through the rest of 2023 here. So now that we're a couple months in, I'm curious just what you think about that. You know, obviously you were kind of anticipating strong sales early on, as you said, but has this exceeded your expectations, or what have some of the surprises been early on?
Yeah, I think personally, I was thinking more of an $80 or $90 million number a month, and we hit 126 in March, and I think we'll be at the 110, 115 in April. Just as my personal opinion. So we're tracking ahead of where we thought. We're doing a good job keeping pricing down. No major increases. So we're really cutting into that black market right now. And the product flowing out of Oklahoma is not flowing as much. And I think we're doing a good job. If we can keep the compression on the price points, we just knock out the black market and our borders. You know, we got seven states that border the great state of Missouri here. So our borders are, they're coming to Missouri instead of leaving Missouri now. And I think you're seeing that out of the numbers in Illinois, that bridge is turned in the opposite direction today. And we're seeing Illinois residents coming over, and you won't see a Missouri buyer heading in the other direction.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's such a critical dynamic as more and more states come online. You know, we've reported on, I guess, what we kind of call the border town effect. And I know certainly even mainstream newspapers have covered that too. And it's obviously an interesting quirk of the industry, but it does translate to real, business dynamics as you're planning what you're trying to accomplish with the Missouri customer base. So of course we see these large numbers coming out of Missouri, and it's very exciting and optimistic. What does that look like day to day? Maybe we can take this on cultivation on one side, on retail on the other side, but for the cultivation team, how does one rise to that challenge of such an expanding customer base so quickly?
Yeah, here in Missouri, we've got about 150,000 square feet of cultivation manufacturing, and just now we're starting construction. We've got an adjacent building that's 101,000 square feet, so we're going to start chopping that off to really ramp up our production, which is would have a footprint of 250,000 square feet in a state of 6 million people. So it's really going to be a nice footprint, but and we got 15 dispensary stores that we're feeding, and we're not keeping up with our own product as much as we should be in those individual stores. So a lot of the guys are ramping up, and we want to keep that cost structure down and keep the momentum we have, basically coming out of, 60 different cultivation licenses that are really operated by, I think, 28 different groups. So we want to keep that momentum going, and everybody's trying to figure out how to get more weight, quality weight, out of each of the existing facilities as we're all ramping up. Because as I mentioned, going from 80 to 90 million, all of a sudden you're at $126 million in revenue. That was kind of not anticipated, but myself and my peers are ramping up to deal with that, which is a wonderful problem to deal with. But everybody that operates in the industry, and we all waited because we had a real short time fuse on the November ballot initiative. So they had to implement by February, first week of February there. And so, between then, obviously you can't grow anymore. You can't build anything else. And so all that stuff's going to kind of come hits, basically third and fourth quarter this year. We'll have basically supply and demand back in line, I believe.
Yeah. It's, I guess sort of an ever-present challenge, especially in the early months of any real market flip. And certainly similar dynamics are playing out on that retail side, just in the interactions between employees and customers, you've got quite the learning curve, really, especially on the consumer side. How has that been going in a general sense? How have the stores been, or how have the retail employees been rising up to that challenge?
Yeah, I think we're fortunate. In Nevada, I went through, you know, from going from medical to an adult use market, and so we kind of knew what we were getting into on that front. And obviously, we staffed up. We've added, I think, 150 more employees in the state of Missouri alone, as now Greenlight's 530 people that work for the company. So we've added a tremendous amount of people on the floor. And then obviously, you change over your tech and adding more kiosks and changing those lines to make sure you got a medical line and an adult use line. And then we did pickup windows in all of our lobbies, which, you know, we keep them off the sales floor, get them in, get them out efficiently. And then also the state of Missouri has drive-thrus. So everywhere we, you know, the vast majority of our stores, I think 10 out of 15 stores has drive-through capabilities. And that takes a little pressure off the inside, and, you know, adding speaker boxes. And Fridays we do a Chick-fil-A style where we're walking down the line and making sure those consumers are getting efficiently through that line. And that's usually our bottleneck on a Friday like today.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know, and it's not the most common thing in the world, but I know drive-thrus are starting to proliferate a little bit. Just speaking for myself personally, it's probably something that I would take advantage of if it were available. You know, you mentioned bottlenecks there. What are some of the ways that staff can address the education question, the consumer education question, in that drive-through setting? Because I feel like you get maybe less time for customer interfacing, but it's also a critical point too.
Yeah, we at least for our stores in our drive-through, it's pickup only. So these are all items that are pre-ordered. We try not to do it hamburger style, if you will.
Yeah.
Sometimes that, you know, you get the car in there that missed that message, and you got to deal with that. But the ideally, those are people pre-packed, ready to go. Come in, you know, come to the website, order that stuff, and we try and get them out of there. The thing that takes the most time is just getting that debit card transaction handled and passing those you know, piece of equipment back and forth. But we do it as pickup only, because if you want to have a bud tender experience, we'd love to have that with you, but come on inside and take the time to look at products and, you know, smell sniffers and do all that other fun stuff we do in our industry.
For sure. And yeah, and speaking of all the fun stuff in terms of like different product categories, are you seeing any trends emerging early on here, or are there certain things, maybe this is a manufacturing question, I suppose, certain types of products that are starting to take off?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's materially different. I think we've, you know, obviously switching from a medical program to an adult use program, obviously you more towards those concentrates, those edibles, et cetera. And I think, you know, it took Colorado and these places a very, very long time to get closer to kind of the 50-50, where flower is 50% and everything else is 50%. And we're starting to see that. We're about a 53% right now as far as flower, and that's really morphed quickly. So I think the consumer is getting a little more educated. And obviously, if you're coming from a border store, those stores, you know, you don't want your car smelling and things like that, as we try and get decriminalization, all this other stuff done in these bordering towns, while they're all working on medical programs. It's a question of what's their time frame on that, and then also what's their time frame on switching to adult use. But what we're seeing is that they educate a consumer. I've quite frankly been shocked since I went in this. I thought the brands would control the industry a lot more than they would. And I thought by now that, you know, they would be coming in specifically for the national brands like they do, and, you know, for a bottle of Tito's or Grey Goose. And that really hasn't happened. And as I think everybody that probably listens to your show knows, the cannabis consumer is very fickle. So they don't like to have the same stuff over and over. And so you got to constantly be innovating out of the manufacturing facility and always giving them a new edible. And whether it's, you know, Trixies or it's a Jolly Rancher or it's whatever, new flavors, and obviously your new strains coming out of there and fast acting things, and you've got to constantly be innovating much, much quicker than any other industry. But I think that's happening across the country. But the biggest one is that the brands aren't really controlling the total market yet as much as I thought they would, you know, when I went into this industry, 8 years ago now.
Yeah, it is kind of an interesting ongoing conversation about the role of brands. And I guess maybe to a point it's different from market to market. But you're right, you know, the individual consumer generally is looking more for whether it's experiences or different product forms. And the shelves, the turnover is pretty fast. I was going to ask, you know, within those large sales numbers, and I know this is kind of an overly broad question, but I'm curious if you're seeing a large number of customers with smaller baskets or larger baskets and maybe a smaller number of customers. I don't know, how do you look at that ratio, I
Yeah,
guess?
no, the border stores, you get a little bit higher, cart value there. Obviously interior stores, you're, mid 60s, low 70s. I think that's pretty consistent across most markets now. So I think that's almost standardized. And and then, your border stores can touch that $100 number, 90 to $100 number. So I think that's the only material difference, but you see less humans sometimes in those stores too. So it's there's a trade-off there, and I think the consumer has, is a compression of their wallet today too, with inflation and all the other stuff that's going on outside of all of our collective control. But they also are coming in spending about the same number that they did, 2 years ago too. So I think obviously we've got an influx of new consumers. We're still trying to figure out what that levels out at or continues to grow. And I think the vast number, obviously we're seeing that cart size hasn't materially changed. It's the number of consumers that are going out and the people that are basically coming off that black market. That I don't believe we're creating new consumers in our business. They might consume more than they did in the black market, but these are people that have had the marijuana product before, and now they're just bringing it over to the legal side of the equation.
Yeah, another unique dynamic of this environment. And speaking of folks from outside of Missouri, you know, you mentioned earlier a handful of other states, including South Dakota. Could you describe the landscape for Greenlight outside of Missouri?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've been operating in Arkansas for a while now. Actually, our first Greenlight store was in Arkansas. We won a license down in Helena, Arkansas. We now have three Greenlight stores that operate down there. Medical market, obviously disappointed that adult use did not go when Missouri did. So we'll see how long that takes. They've got a good vibrant medical market, but obviously medical market's much different than what we have here. The price points have compressed down there, so the consumer is getting more grams per dollar than they were before. And and they've opened up some reciprocity to allow people from other states to come in, which also overall helps the state of Arkansas. And then South Dakota, really new market, trying to get out those patient cards efficiently. The market's growing, but it's a smaller market, and you're not seeing the tourism yet in a place like that. And also getting out those medical cards and making it efficient to allow people to get out there. So that cost of the medical card is a restrictor up there. West Virginia, kind of similar, where operators, like in the state of Missouri, we sponsor over 40,000 of the 200,000 patient cards that were out there. So we reduced down that cost for patients to be able get their card. So you are $49 to get your card, and then we incentivized you to come to a Greenlight location. So we help that program in states like West Virginia and South Dakota. They keep the dispensary or cultivation operation out of that equation, so we're not allowed to have these patient events and things like that too. So you're spending $200 to get a medical card versus $49 in the state of Missouri. So those numbers are growing, but they're growing slower than we want to see them. And
Gotcha.
then also we operate in Illinois, which has been an adult use market for a while. We opened that store 2 weeks ago. It's climbing. We're kind of attacking the Wisconsin border up there, and great location right off the highway, 12 miles from the Wisconsin border. So that store is growing and is being very efficient right now.
Fantastic. Yeah, I just to touch on Arkansas, you know, I was we sort of split up the states that night in November on election night, and I was covering Arkansas. I was also covering Oklahoma last month, and obviously just very unfortunate, but from a business standpoint, is there a degree of whiplash there where you might be anticipating a flip and then any plans have to be set aside?
Yeah, we were optimistic. Obviously, it was a disappointing day. That was over before it got started, sadly, when the first numbers came in. So I'm sure that wasn't a fun night for you to be covering that, being in the cannabis industry as I was looking at the numbers coming in and seeing those coming. Yeah, it's definitely a whiplash. A lot of these guys built cultivation up, so the price points per gram are dropping coming to the stores, and then we drop up going out to the consumer. So you're seeing price compression down there as a lot of these guys on the cultivation side got ahead of that. And the number, we lost by 12% in the state of Arkansas. So do you come back and spend those millions of dollars that were spent on that campaign in 24? So we'll see how that all plays out. And those campaigns are expensive. And so, sure. We got to see if that reloads. And then obviously in Oklahoma, I think, the residents there obviously kind of saw they're trying to put the genie a little bit back in the bottle there with stores in every corner and a lot of black market coming out of there. So I was not surprised at all on the Oklahoma vote.
Yeah. It's some tough recent news on that front in terms of at least the state by state wave. Of course, at the top of the conversation, you had mentioned your experience in Nevada and California. And I know in that feature that Tony had written, he kind of got a little bit more in depth with that. But I was curious just from maybe a regulatory standpoint or a market standpoint, if you could kind of contrast Missouri, especially these recent adult use months, with the Nevada market. And I guess what I mean by that is, as these newer states are coming online, are there certain lessons that are being learned, or are there things that are being done differently and perhaps more efficiently, either on the regulatory side or just on an overall market dynamic?
Yeah, I think if you look at Nevada versus Missouri, it's very, very similar. Limited license state, X number of licenses out there, not a whole bunch more discussion of, getting something out of our capital. It's in the Constitution today, getting additional licenses out of Jefferson City when you got basically a 2/3 majority of Republicans is probably not going to happen. So I think you're going to see a limited license in Nevada, limited license here. As we say in all these regulatory environments that we go into, 95% of all the rules and regs across these states are identical. And then you've got these little minor tweaks. So from a compliance and everything else standpoint, you're seeing very similar deal. Out in, I used to say that Nevada was the gold standard. We're going to go back in the Nevada market here in short order. We really like that market. When we sold, we had non-compete, so we couldn't be out there. So looking forward to get back in that market. But it's a very, very similar market to here. You see the volume at the stores are very comparable, and it's got some unique things like Planet 13. But other than that, the average dispenser out there is very, very comparable to here as far as, volumes and obviously the product SKUs. I had 300 SKUs out here. I got 300 SKUs here of almost the same products, different labels on the outside of them, but very, very similar, Department of Tax out here versus Department of Health here. But other than that, it's they're twin sisters in my view. And I think if there's any lessons to be learned, it's these limited license states. And that's the only thing that Greenlight focuses on is going in these markets, not like in Oklahoma where it's, $2,500 in a beating heart. You go into these where they have some kind of vetting process, like Alabama just went through and Texas and Florida next week, those type of things where you can submit applications, limited license. You kind of know what the playing field is. It might change, but up front, at least you know where those are. And I think, when they're drafting the Alabama regs, they're looking at a Missouri and they're looking at an Arkansas and places like that to craft those regs. And I think at the end of the day, if they have some kind of scoring system or vetting system, it limits down that and it's much more controllable from a regulatory standpoint.
Yeah. To sort of twist it around a little bit on an operations standpoint, for medical operators, maybe on cultivation side, maybe they're vertically integrated in states like Maryland or perhaps Delaware, or if I were a betting man, Ohio, Pennsylvania, yep. Some of these states that might make the flip in the near future. Are there certain things that you've recently learned in the last 6 months, maybe that you'd like to offer as advice to teams that might be you know, going through this flip in the near future?
Yeah, most of them now, when they're flipping, it's you know, you're just selling more of the same. So mm-hmm. so ideally, you know, there's one blue tag that goes out, and I think we all learned from Colorado having separate doors for the medical guy versus the adult use guy makes no sense. And having them come in and basically the medical card allows them to basically purchase more and has a lower tax rate. And I think that's, you know, that program has kind of been vetted out, and we went through that learning lesson in Colorado. And I think everybody realized that, you know, having two doors next to each other makes no sense from an operation standpoint. So I think as these are all going, that if you can basically focus on still keeping those limited licenses out there and not oversaturating a market where, you know, people don't invest. You know, you can't put a $25 million cultivation facility up if there's an unlimited number of cultivators out there. So I think if you can keep that program and, you know, with our tax rates with 280E and all that other stuff, people think that the money's just, you know, pouring out of the sky. And when you're paying, you know, basically 45-50% tax rates on your dispensary operations, it's a little different math. So, you know, in the medical market, I always say, you know, if you're breaking even, you're doing a very good job. And then obviously adult use, you could actually have some return of capital to your investors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the myth of the money printing factory is awfully persistent. Of course, here we are in April 2023. I want to just get a sense of any goals that you may have as a team. This could be within Missouri or outside of Missouri, but anything you guys are hoping to accomplish in 2023 or anything that you'd like, you know, listeners to sort of keep an eye on from Greenlight?
Yeah, from Greenlight, we're going to expand our footprint. I think we'll have another two states here in the next quarter. We're expanding our cultivation and in West Virginia. We just picked up a cultivation out there, and obviously adding another 100,000 square feet here. And then we're going to be going into some new markets here. And then I also think the landscape of the, you know, kind of larger MSOs is going to change a little bit. You know, Alabama's June 12th. They're going to announce who won those five integrated licenses, which is real interesting. And Texas has these new licenses coming out, and we've got some legislative stuff down in Texas that could make that more of a vibrant market and start knocking away at their black market. And then obviously Florida is also submitting next week. And we still got a chance over in North Carolina to get a medical bill through there. We worked mm-hmm. hard on Kansas this year, didn't get it across the finish line, but a bunch of these other states are going to start flipping. So we're very aggressive in any of these limited license markets that we can go make a splash into. We like to go win licenses instead of buy them. And are very frugal with our capital resources. But I think, you know, for us, we're 530 people today. I think, you know, this time next year we'll be over 1,000. And we've got, you know, nine dispensaries that are somewhere in the construction process before any of those new markets come on. So it's exciting times at Greenlight, where a lot of these is with the equities markets where they're unjustly depressed. And I feel like we're like 2008 in the banking industry, like these equities are, you know, you can buy GTI at 4 or 5 times earnings right now. It's crazy. But as everybody's kind of taking and hitting the brake pedal a little bit and kind of consolidating up, we're hitting the gas pedal aggressively now and looking at strategic opportunities. We're debt free and paying out dividends now, and we're focused on, you know, just being a normal business, whether we're in the marijuana industry or the widget business. We're hitting the gas pedal right now as there's a lot of opportunity.
Absolutely. I know, just sort of as a closing note, you had mentioned, and I keep referring to this feature, but you had mentioned in that feature with Tony, that you have sort of a background as a serial entrepreneur. I know we're kind of just talking cannabis here, but it is nice to hear that all of that investment going on at a time when it does seem like it's very tough out there economically, but it seems like a ripe moment for investment just from a, you know, business 101 kind of standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at these equities, it's crazy. And with those equities compressed for other groups that are out raising money, it's impossible. Like, why wouldn't you buy a Verano or a GTI instead of investing in some startup in the cannabis industry? It makes no sense. So I think that all gets rectified. Obviously we all thought, you know, in December last year that we were going to get some safe banking or something like that, and all the equities went up to a more reasonable number, And they keep getting beat up on a daily basis for no apparent reason when we've got, you know, the total market cap's gone from like $110 billion and it's now at $12 billion. And despite we're growing, we're going to be a $50 billion industry with 25% earnings numbers. It makes no logical sense at all. So I think, you know, just picking the winners and losers on that, and then also your debt structures as those equity values have dropped, that the debt is now in the high teens. So it's really tough for people to go out and grow. We're growing using cash flow and being creative, you know, staying debt free and still paying dividends and things like that. So we're in a real good position, but for other operators getting into this, it's a very challenging time until we see something out of DC. And I think Cole Memo 2.0 might give us a little lift. But we definitely need something, you know, going through the branches of government.
No doubt about that. Well, we will be excitedly watching, you know, the green light story continue to unfold. Certainly watching Missouri with a lot of excitement, as well as these other states. It's exciting times in the industry, and it's great to get a sense of the story over at Greenlight. So, John, I thank you for your time today. It was great having you on the show.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate what you do for the industry.
And that's a wrap on another episode of Beyond the Show. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with John Mueller of Greenlight out in Missouri and other states in the U.S., of course. I know I did. It's been super fun getting to focus on Missouri for the past 2 weeks on this show, as well as the past few weeks over on Cannabis Business Times with a lot of our reporting on the sales figures coming out of Missouri. You know, these are early days in that market, and there's a lot to dig into. Especially if you're an operator in that state, but certainly if you're an operator in another state that may be flipping to adult use or legalizing or reforming cannabis in one way or the other. And there are quite a few of those states, like I mentioned at the top of the show, Kentucky and Delaware certainly are on our minds. And Minnesota, as of the moment that I'm recording this, Minnesota is on the cusp of legalizing cannabis. And we'll see whether that pans out. I guess you never really know in this industry. And certainly there are other states issuing more licenses. So it never really ends. And that's why we're here, to talk about how operators are navigating those trends. It's the exact sort of thing that we're going to be talking about at Cannabis Conference just in, about 3.5 months here. So visit CannabisConference.com to learn more about everything we're talking about here on the podcast. Make sure you get signed up. Those rates are increasing as time goes on, as we get closer to the show. So save yourself a few bucks. It's a little tight out there. You're going to want to do that. But we know that you want to be out in Vegas. We want to see you out there, and we're very excited. So we will. We'll see you out there. Thanks.